Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 through 23. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Then Herod, when he had saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping in loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, "Rise, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead." And he rose and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. And he went and lived in a city called Nazareth, so that what was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled, that he would be called a Nazarene. This is the word of the Lord.
Christmas can feel like running a gauntlet of challenges. There are relational challenges, financial challenges, emotional challenges, time management challenges, weight management challenges. There are, do we really need to have that discussion again, challenges. And inevitably, somewhere running through the Christmas gauntlet of challenges, we slip up. Somewhere along the line, we fall down. I faltered this year in the decoration challenges category. You see, we typically put our Christmas tree up the Saturday after Thanksgiving. But Nina and I had a wedding in Richmond that Saturday, and so we were not able to complete that task. And every day that went on beyond the Saturday after Thanksgiving, the kids got a little more nervous, a little more antsy, a little more frustrated that the tree was not up. The whole time I'm looking around our home and all of the stuff that we have and the stuff that we will be getting for Christmas and all that it takes to have four kids in a space, and I'm going, you know, maybe a live tree in the home is not the answer right now. But everyone persisted, and so I finally gave in, and we found ourselves out buying a Christmas tree one evening. We came home to put the tree up, and I strung the lights, we did all the ornaments, and then we have this tradition where each kid puts the star on top of the tree, and then I have to take it down, and then we put it up on the tree, and then I have to take it down, and then we put it up on the tree, and then I have to take it down, and then we finally put it back up on the tree. So we're about to start this tradition, and the first daughter goes to put the star on the tree, and it bumps into the ceiling. The tree is too tall, and so I realized I need to trim this Christmas tree. Now, if you're a regular at the chapel, you already know this about me. If you're a guest, let me just have a confessional moment here with you. I'm not handy at all. I'm terrible when it comes to fixing things and getting little odds and ends, you know, back together. I just am not good at that kind of thing. So I rarely have the right tools to do that kind of thing. So when I do have the right tools, I get pretty excited. So I went and I got the tools. I was ready to take care of this little Christmas tree issue that we were having. And I very confidently went to clip the top of that tree, and I clipped the top of that tree and the light string, pop! All of the lights blew up and all the kids started crying immediately as the whole tree that we just spent hours working on went out. So here are, you would think it would just be one light. No, the whole thing blew, pile of lights. There they are, all the lights done. But I thought before I pulled all the lights, do you know how hard it is to pull lights off of a tree that has already been decorated? And then to eventually have to put the lights back on the tree that is already decorated, so ornaments are falling and breaking all over the place. And so I go, I'm gonna try to splice these lights together. And I start trying to get the lights together, and I get some electrical tape and I put them on, I plug it in, and nothing works. But I did leave the electrical tape at the top of the tree just for a little symbol of our mishap until we got the lights back on. The star eventually did go on the tree a few days later. And so I found myself defeated at Christmas, defeated by my Christmas tree. So I'll ask you, what's defeating you this Christmas? And think beyond Christmas, not just what's defeating you this Christmas, what's been defeating you in your life? What's been defeating you for the past several years and you just can't seem to overcome it? Maybe it's your job, your boss, your coworkers. Maybe it's your marriage, your children, your home. Maybe you feel defeated by your illness, your broken relationships, your finances. Maybe your unfulfilled aspirations are defeating you. Or maybe it's your fear, your anxiety, your guilt, your shame, your doubt. Maybe your pride's been defeating you, thinking, I should have beaten this by now. Maybe it's your unwillingness to forgive or your reluctance to reconcile. What is defeating you this Christmas? And I would add as a corollary to that question, what is your hope to overcome defeat? What's your new plan if this thing has been problematic for years now in your life? What is your new plan? How are you going to come at this in the new year? How might you overcome it? In whom will you put your trust to help you overcome it? Well, as we talk about defeat at Christmas, and we look at this story from Matthew 2, what we will see Matthew is doing is this. Christmas compares a defeated king with the prevailing king. And we will remain defeated in our lives until we stand with the prevailing king. Right from the beginning of the story, Matthew introduces us to two kings. I want to tell you about the defeated king, and then I'll tell you about the prevailing king. First, the defeated king, his name's Herod. And we'll meet him right in the first few verses of Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, which Doug summarized, giving us a little context to our scripture reading for this evening. I'll read it to you. Matthew 2, 1 to 3. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, there he is. Matthew wants to know, this man wants to be on the throne. He wants to be king. In the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? And all of a sudden, you meet the second king. There's another king on the horizon. For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. We learn that there are two kings. One's name is Herod. The other is the king of the Jews, who we'll meet later as Jesus. And when Herod hears that there is a rival to his throne, what's his response? He's troubled. He's troubled deeply at the possibility of another king. And so he goes to great lengths to avoid defeat. He goes to great lengths in order to be the prevailing king himself. Let me just tell you some of the things Herod does in his attempt to prevail. First off, corruption. He's in a corrupt relationship with an occupying government. He's turned his back on the people that he is pretending to serve, God's people, the Israelites there in Judea, and he's made a corrupt alliance with the occupying force of Rome. Israel's an occupied territory at this point in history. Warmongering. You know what Herod does? He takes a section of the temple, the most holy place to God's people, and he adds onto it a citadel, a military base, so that he essentially lords that power, that warmongering power over them, say, if you get out of line, even as you go to worship your God, I'll be right there watching. Bribery. You hear how he assembles the chief priests and the scribes so quickly. It's because he has them all in his back pocket with bribes. Deception. He tells a lie to the wise men, tries to get them to think he's ready to worship this king too, when that's the last thing he wants to do with this king. And when the wise men end up tricking him, he goes into a rage. He just goes into a rage that ends in violence and death. Herod does all of those things in an attempt to become the prevailing king himself. And the truth is that there is a little Herod that lives inside us all. There's a little Herod inside us all that is troubled when someone comes to us and says, you may not be an authority unto yourself. You may not be the last word on this subject. And we rise up. And the Herod says, I'm going to grip tight to this throne. I am going to be the final authority here. Maybe you recognize some of Herod's attempts to prevail. Maybe they're similar to you. And the little Herod inside your heart, the little Herod inside my heart, or maybe yours are different. I'll just list three common attempts that we all make to become the prevailing king, the Herod on the throne of our own lives. The first one is acquisition. We acquire things. We think, if I could only achieve that number in my bank account, If I could only get my 401k to that level, if my bottom line could be that high, then I'll be fine. I'll be good. I'll be in charge of my own life. Maybe it's not a number in a bank account. Maybe it's a neighborhood. Maybe it's a car. Maybe it's a position at the company where you work. Maybe it's not acquisition for you. Maybe it's affirmation. Maybe it's, if I heard the words, I love you, from the right person in the right way, then I would finally feel safe and secure on my throne. Maybe it's the number of likes on an Instagram post. Maybe it's the affirmation we receive from getting particular grades in school, or when we achieve the prize. But if it's not acquisition, it's usually affirmation that we use in order to prevail. And then there's the preservation for when we have gained the acquisition and the affirmation, we must preserve it all. We must guard it and protect it and make sure that nobody else gets close, that nobody else beats the record, nobody else takes the promotion, that the job is protected, the house is protected, the bottom line is protected, the affirmation, the praise is protected. But as tight as Herod's grip was on his throne, and as tight as our grips might be on our own thrones, I want to tell you what happened to Herod as a warning for all who seek to place their own personal Herod on the throne of their own personal life. In the end, Rome would fall. As powerful as the Roman Empire was, that alliance, that corrupt alliance, would eventually come to naught. Herod's military would be defeated. The temple and his military base attached to it would be destroyed. Not too many years later, even. The wise men would outsmart him, and his violent rage leading to the death of infants in Bethlehem did nothing to make him the prevailing king. And we read his fate in verse 19 of our story. But when Herod died. It's a small little phrase in the story, but it's the fate of every Herod. It's the fate of everyone who attempts to sit on their own throne. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, "Rise, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead." And God's kingdom moves forward, because Christmas compares a defeated king with the prevailing king. And we will remain defeated until we stand with the prevailing king. So let me introduce the prevailing king to you. His name is Jesus. I want to read to you a little bit of his story from verses 13 to 15 in Matthew chapter 2, what Doug read earlier. "Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him.' And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I have called my son.'" In these three short verses, let me tell you what Jesus prevails over. He prevails in the midst of an assassination plot, a frantic flight from home, a total abandonment of all their worldly possessions, a dangerous midnight journey, and an exile in a foreign land. If that wasn't impressive enough, there are three quotes from the Old Testament that all point to Jesus prevailing over the darkest forces in our world. I read the first one in Matthew 2:15, where it says, "Out of Egypt I will call my son." This points to Jesus bringing about a new exodus. See, God's son, so to speak, the people of Israel, they found themselves enslaved in a foreign land with a foreign power lording their authority over them in the person of Pharaoh. And God raised up a man named Moses, and you can read about this in the book of Exodus. Exodus just means to get out, and they rise up and they get out and they leave that oppressive force of Pharaoh behind. They are freed from the enslavement to which he held them. And when Matthew says Jesus coming out of Egypt is again another picture of, "Out of Egypt I call my son," except this time it's a greater exodus, because it's not just for one group of people or one nation, but for all who would put their faith in him. A new exodus is here, and it's an exodus that exceeds the freedom that was brought about by the exodus of Moses. In verse 17, you see Matthew quote the prophet Jeremiah at a time of the exile, when God's people were again taken from their land and placed under the rule of a foreign government, this time not Egypt, but Babylon. And when Matthew quotes Jeremiah here, what he is saying is this is the end of the true exile. The exile that we all experience from sin and death and the alienation that brings about, that Jesus has not only come to provide a new exodus, a new pathway to freedom, but the end to all exile. And finally, in verse 23, we read what was spoken by the prophets would be fulfilled, that he would be called a Nazarene, and he went to live in a town called Nazareth. Nazareth at the time was not highly regarded. And this would show that God was bringing about a new kind of power, a power that would be seen most clearly through weakness, a power that would be exhibited through his commitment to serve and to love the least and the last and the lost of this world, not to be powerful in the sense of Herod or Pharaoh, but a new kind of power, a new kind of authority from love, compassion, and a servant's heart. You see, as furiously as the world tried to defeat Jesus, in the end, we read in verse 23 that he went and lived. He lived in a city called Nazareth. And this is a direct contrast to what Matthew writes about Herod. But when Herod died and when Jesus went and lived, in the end, he lived. Though death chased Jesus from the beginning, he lived. Because the truth is, we see death chasing Jesus. We see Herod chasing Jesus here. The truth is, it was actually Jesus who was chasing death the whole time. You see, Jesus chased the forces of death and darkness in this world by serving the poor, healing the sick, and touching the untouchable. Jesus was chasing death when he welcomed the outcast, when he embraced children, when he spoke truth to power. Jesus chased death when he taught the confused, when he had compassion on the harassed. Jesus was chasing death when we saw him seeking and saving the lost, calling people to repentance and announcing the kingdom. He chased death onto the cross and into the grave that he might blow a hole right through death and reconcile what people believed was unreconcilable, the relationship between God and humanity and between brothers and sisters and friends. And as he does this, he offers a place in his prevailing kingdom to any and all who believe. That's the prevailing king. And Christmas compares a defeated king with the prevailing king. And I want to remind us again that we will all remain defeated until we stand with the prevailing king. If any of us this evening are still giving Herod a chance to sit on the throne of our lives, I have one more story I want to tell you. It's not my story, it's a classic story. It's a little book by Ernest Hemingway called The Old Man and the Sea. And if you hated reading this in high school, I hope to redeem it for you this evening. And as we worship as one whole family of faith, if you're a high school student that's going to have to read it, don't check out right now. I'm about to give you the Cliff Notes version, okay? In this story, there's an old man who hasn't caught a fish in a long time. The whole town said, "You don't have it anymore, old man. You're never going to be able to catch fish anymore to support yourself, old man." And so all of the other fishermen exclude him and sort of box him out of the whole fishing industry in this town. Except there's a little boy, one little boy in the town that really believes in the old man, and he says, "I want to go fishing with you, old man." The old man says, "Don't come with me. I don't catch fish very often. You're young. You need to start providing for your family right now. I will go by myself. But I promise one day I will come home with another great fish." The old man sets out rowing his boat out into the ocean. He wants to prevail. And eventually, he catches the biggest marlin you've ever seen. You see it right there on the cover. He hooks this marlin. And he says, "I have prevailed. I'm going to show them I can still win at this game. I'm not going to be poor for long when I bring this marlin back in to shore." But almost immediately after he hooks the marlin, he starts to have some doubts. Is he really prevailing, or is something else going on? Hemingway writes this, then his head started to become a little unclear, and he thought, is he bringing me in, or am I bringing him in? And who hasn't gotten that promotion and thought, wait a second, am I bringing this thing in, or is this thing now in control of me? Who hasn't achieved a level of success or a bottom line that everyone wanted to get to and go, I finally made it, only to realize that maybe, just maybe, you lost something along the way. The old man begins to have doubts. And ultimately what happens is as he brings the fish alongside his boat and begins to row back to shore, sharks close in on his prize. He was full of resolution, but he had little hope. It was too good to last, he thought. He took one look at the great fish as he watched the shark close in. It might as well have been a dream, he thought. You see, the old man's victory ends in defeat as he tows nothing but bones all the way back to shore. Many of us have had victories that we think are going to make us the prevailing king of our own lives, only to realize that the sharks eventually closed in and ate it all up, and our victory turned once again to defeat. And so I'll ask one more time, what is defeating you? In what are you placing your hope to overcome this defeat? Hemingway goes on to write maybe my favorite line of the whole book as he hauls the bones onto the beach. The man whispers to himself, you're tired, old man. You're tired on the inside. Are you tired of defeat? Are you tired maybe somewhere deep down inside, and it's very difficult to explain that feeling? But when you read that line, you go, that's me. If that's you, and I'll just admit that that's me very often, I would just ask you this. With whom shall you take your stand this Christmas? Will you try to rally your inner Herod for another round of acquisition, affirmation, and preservation? Or will you take your stand with the prevailing king, the king who chased death to offer you life, to offer you life you could never acquire on your own, to offer you life that affirms you as a son or daughter of the Most High prevailing king? A life that will be more than preserved, a life that will persevere through all eternity. You see, Christmas compares a defeated king with a prevailing king. And we all stand defeated apart from the prevailing king. And this Christmas Eve, will you make this your moment to take your stand with the prevailing king?